Luckily, I haven't seen that in any of the desktop replacement LCD monitors. Those are still all anti-glare surfaces. So if I do have incandescent lights, if I find any incandescent lights in a facility, there's a couple things we can do. If they're in these types of light sources, which are called PAR lamps, which are a reflector lamp, which pushes the light out, which, you know, the lights that are up in here are different versions of PAR lamps, but they are still PAR lamps. Today, we've already moved to what are called halogen PAR lamps, but we could actually switch those out to what are called halogen IRs. And if I take a look at, say, this Philips one, because it's a 25-degree flood, and here's their 60-watt IR in a 25-degree flood, I can see that my life got longer, 3,000 to 4,200, so that's cool. My center beam candle power, this is how intense the light is right at the center. It's kind of, think about your garden hose with the sprayer on it. You know, is it the wide spray pattern or is it the narrow stream? Well, the center is, it's a little bit lower, but that's going to be so close again that we're really going to never know. And in PAR lamps, we hardly ever talk about lumens. It's lower, but again, candle power is really what we want to know. So we saved 60 watts, or about 33% of the energy. We got longer life, and we got basically the same center punch. We could do the same thing with MR16s. These are very popular. They really should only be used in a few applications, things like jewelry stores, china, crystal. Those types of objects look much better under the MR16s, but there are, again, IR versions of these, 37 or 35 watt, that would replace the 50 watt MR16s. And just to show you, here's the PAR lamp version. So here's my old 150 watt PAR lamp, produced 320 foot candles. If I went to the 90 watt, I saved, 60 watts, but I produced almost 50% more light in the center. And you can see it is actually doing I'm kind of looking at how much of this piece is covered, and it's doing pretty good. There's really not much more spill light over on the white parts. What it's done is taken a little bit of this extra spill light up here and pushed it back into the beam. Even more in that IR, we can see now we're up to 500 foot candles, but I'm still lighting just about the same amount of that picture. So a good thing to do with the IR technology. Screw-in compact fluorescence. I know the utilities hate me to say this, but I love the screw-in compact fluorescent. I was just up 2 weeks ago. I went into Home Depot, my favorite store, and there was a four-pack of compact fluorescents for $3.98, and right below it was a utility rebate coupon, instant coupon. I didn't have to send in for $4 off. Cost me 35 cents. I had to pay taxes on it for four. We have reached the bottom. I mean, we can't go much lower when all you're doing is paying taxes on compact fluorescent. Even if they wouldn't have had that rebate at $4, that's a buck a piece. I mean, I'm happy with those. It's a great technology where you've got a source that you don't need to dim. Compact fluorescents don't like to be dimmed, and you can find one that fits into that incandescent fixture. Yes?
I heard now that they're making them, you know, for the bathroom fixtures that have been the round globe.
Right.
But they now make that they put some kind of cover on.
Right. The bathroom type fixtures, do they make ones with basically a globe over the outside or, you know, frosted shade, I'll call it. There's a number of fixtures or number of lamps that actually do that, whether ones that look like your normal A lamp or even some of them look like the G lamp. Yeah, those are available. But for a compact fluorescent to try to light artwork, doesn't do much. This goes back to my comment about effective lighting. I have been annoyed by some of the utilities up in the Seattle area who go, oh, we can just take out those PAR lamps and put in compact fluorescents, and we're going to light art with it. Well, we can see here's my 16-watt compact fluorescent. I got a whopping 17.5-foot candles. Yeah, maybe I had a 75-watt R lamp, and it produced 25-foot candles, or my GE Genera, which is a induction lamp, at 20-foot candles. And yeah, I'm getting a lot longer hours. And, you know, I've only cut the light level by, 20% there and maybe 30% there. But even in all of these, look how much of the wall I'm lighting up versus if I replace that with a 45-watt, if I buy the 130-volt, it's only 40 watts, and I'm getting 112-foot candles. this is, to me, much more effective. I don't even know that these are happening. You know, that, the 112-foot candles, I can see that. And my lamp life's at 5,000 hours, 120 volts. If I use the 130-volt version, it'll last 10,000 hours. So I can do some of this stuff still with incandescent if I'm very careful in the way I do it. Another slide that I borrowed from Francis Rubenstein, Lawrence Berkeley National Labs, just showing the issue of T12 and T8 ballasts. And we really have kind of gone over the tipping point now with T12s. We can see, there's still a lot of T12s that are out there. T8s are rapidly increasing in the market. This is, I think, 2003 data, so in the last 3 or 4 years, I'm sure we're well over the T8 lamps have now surpassed T12 lamps in new installations, which is a really good thing because the Energy Policy Act of 2005, if you dig through it, you will find this chart that says from 2010, so ballast covered by this paragraph, manufactured on or after July 1, 2010, or sold by the manufacturer on or after October 1, 2010, have to meet this goofy standard, ballast efficacy factor. It's a number that I've never really understood, and its biggest problem is that depending on whether you're one lamps or two lamps, it changes dramatically. But what we find is that if we do a little bit of math, we find out that for the 34-watt T12, which a couple of people said they still had in their facilities, a one-lamp system could only use 34 watts. Well, it's a 34-watt lamp, but when you add the ballast wattage in, most of the catalog stuff is at 43. So you will not be able to buy the ballast after 2010. For the two-lamp T12, four-foot lamps, they have to use less than 65 watts, but they typically are at 72. So the most common ones that are out there in the four-foot versions, after 2010, it's going to be hard to find the ballast. They're not going to ever outlaw the lamps. But if a ballast fails, you call up your distributor and say, hey, I need a T12 ballast, and they're going to say, sorry, we don't have any anymore. So this is another reason why it's going to be really important to think about this in the next few years, especially if you can find the utility will help you pay, or you know, if you're in Oregon, the Betsy business. It's a thank you. It's a tax credit. I can never keep it all straight. But there's a tax credit there to doing these energy efficiency measures. Or call up your local utility or the Energy Trust of Oregon and find out what programs they're running. We can see the same thing holds true for the F96 T12, very popular lamp in grocery stores. It needed to use less than 114 watts on a two-lamp system and typically cataloged at about 126. So that ballast is going to go away. Interestingly, they didn't crank down the number far enough on the T12 HOs, but those are found in some warehouses and you know, it needed to be 216 to 221, and typically they're just slightly under that number. And when we do get into T8s, I have a problem with the lamp manufacturers. And that is that we've gotten too many lamps. There are 97 different choices. A really good example of this was up in Seattle. There's a small little aircraft manufacturer up there. They have a couple of buildings in the Seattle area. The distributor who supplies them with lamps did a little survey, and they bought 37 different 4-foot T8 lamps in 2006. 37 different ones. You think, how could you do that? Well, different color temperatures. So they bought some of the 27, the 3,000, 35, 41, 5,000, maybe even a couple 65s. They bought them in the 70 series and they bought them in the 80 series. And then they started buying some of these energy saving lamps. They got up to 37 different kinds. So how's the maintenance person going to know what lamp to maintain? They figured they could save $8 million a year if they could get down to six. 2 days in a meeting for 2 days with them, we got them down to two. Now, whether they'll do it or not, I don't know. But if somebody told me you could save $8 million by going from 37 to two, I'd be very seriously considering that. T5s are an even newer generation of fluorescent lamps than T8. They aren't necessarily any better than T8s. Many people think that T5s, oh, they're out of Europe, they gotta be better. In certain applications, that is true. If I was in a high ceiling, and this is not to me a high ceiling, if I was in 35 feet mounting height in a warehouse, in an industrial application, the T5HO produces twice as much light as a 4 foot, and it's a 4 foot lamp, as a 4 foot T8. It uses twice as much energy doing it, so its lumens per watt, miles per gallon, are almost identical to the T8. But I use less lamps. So that's where the T5 can really be a boon. And this just shows you the chart that shows you, and I typically go to this mean lumen column. Oh, here's my T12, produced 2,300 lumens, lumens per watt, 67. Oh, okay, if I put in my basic T8, which costs $1.19, I gotta change the ballast, I jumped up to 83 lumens per watt. That's a huge increase in efficiency. Gotta be careful if you do a one-to-one retrofit. If you got T12s and do a T8 retrofit, you'll end up with probably 25% higher light levels than you have right now. So there's some tricks you can do of using what are called low ballast factor ballasts to try to tone that down, which actually saves you even more energy. We're also starting to see some, whatever we want to call them, I think GE calls them super long life. Yeah, that's what they call them right there. That's what it says. Think they call them. Philips, I think they call theirs extra long life or extended long life XLL lamps. And these are going for 36,000 to 40,000 hours. And this is 3 hours per start, which is where we normally think of things. And then one of the questions becomes, well, how much light does it produce at that long life? Well, here's their curve. And this is actually 50,000 hours. And at 50,000 hours, that T8 lamp is still producing 94%. Of the light level it started with. So you put them in and you don't really get that depreciation of light, which is really cool. The other thing that we need to think about today, especially with everything being, you know, green being the thing that's in, is there's mercury in every fluorescent lamp. Philips has been kind of the pioneer here. The other manufacturers are doing very similar things. They all got them down to about 3.5 milligrams of mercury, and then Philips in the last year is pushing theirs down all the way down to 1.7. But if you're concerned, which I am concerned about mercury in fluorescent lamps, we really need to go to this website, lamprecycle.org. Oops, I didn't change this from my presentation that I did last week up in Alaska, so ignore that one spot right over there. But what we can do is go over here and we can click on State Lamp Recycling Regulations and Contacts. And then you look under Oregon or Washington or wherever state you are interested in, and it will give you contact information of who to contact. I don't know if there's anything in Canada up there. I haven't looked on this website to know.
I'm just looking at the lamp recyclers.
Yeah, it does say, very good, thank you. It does say Canada right there. So I'm sure that if I click on that, I would find some information on what to do in BC. A really cool lamp, if you happen to have any incandescent lamps and you want to be more efficient, and say it's a retail or a display lighting, accent lighting application, and you want to use a source that is a lot longer life, this lamp is a 10,500 hour life. It is a metal halide lamp. Typically, metal halides, you have to have an external ballast, but Philips has actually integrated the ballast into the lamp. Now, it's not cheap. This is about an $80 bulb. It lasts 10,500 hours, which is like 3 to 5 times longer than the incandescent it replaces. It uses 25 watts, which is about a third of the energy that the incandescent that it would replace. So a 75-watt incandescent it could replace. And it's just like, wow, this is great. Now, the reason I'm really excited about this lamp is these guys right here, which are dedicated base ceramic metal halides, meaning that there's going to be a ballast that goes with this. The fixture manufacturers, and I don't know the answer to this, and it's one of those questions that hopefully gets answered someday soon. Why do these lamps and fixtures cost so much? These bulbs cost about $40 a piece, but the fixture they go into them costs $200. Where this guy goes into a $15 fixture. And you might already have the fixture that this one goes into. And why that's important isn't because this is a bad lamp. No, it's a really good lamp. We can see that it, you know, here's my center beam candle powers, and I don't think I should have had one here that was an incandescent so you could see how much more light it produces. Well, here's a good example. Here's the old 150. We saw this chart already. Here's the 90-watt halogen, and here is that 39-watt ceramic metal halide in the version that has a ballast that goes with it. Now, if you know anything about lighting, one of the interesting things about lighting is if I take a light source and move it, say, from 2 feet away from a wall to 4 feet away from the wall, my light level will be 1/4 of what it started with. This light is twice as far away from the wall as this one is. So I could really take this 640 and multiply it by 4. And that's how intense it would be. So I'm getting a lot of punch, I'm getting a lot of efficiency by using these ceramic metal halides. But what's coming down the road are light-emitting diodes, LEDs. These are the really cool kid on the block. This is the kid, this is Fonzie. You know, this is the kid you want to be, your friend. You can do things like we see here, of we can put them inside and they can change color behind some frosted glass. Or we can put them in light sources like these right here and shine them with this sign, and this sign over a 20-minute period will change colors. So we can change color, we can get white light. Right now, these fixtures are very expensive, but they're an instant-on light source, and I can do some things with them that I can't do with these metal halides. These metal halides are just a static source. So if I was considering changing out to a metal halide, and I was thinking about these guys here, where I got to buy a $200 fixture, I might seriously consider this, even though it costs $80, because it's going to be less expensive, because in a couple of years, I really should have put in an LED fixture, because I can do so much more with it. LEDs depreciate in light over the life, so you got to get good quality LEDs. You can see here's one that really depreciates badly. Here's another one that does much better. And if you've ever done anything with mercury vapor, it's one of the issues. These will not, LEDs don't fail. They just produce less and less and less light over time. So it's one of the issues the lighting industry needs to deal with is, you know, if something's depreciated like this where it's only producing 18% of the light that it started with, it really should have turned off at some point. We got to get these things to shut off. You know, maybe at 50%, let's get these guys to shut off. Well, the good LEDs are rated for 70% lumen maintenance, so they're going to still maintain 70% of their light output at 50,000 hours. That's a long time. Probably we put it in and we won't have to deal with it. At least that's my hope. We're seeing some interesting fixtures, both residentially and commercially. This one was actually developed for the California residential market, but it's becoming extremely popular in commercial applications where you have an incandescent downlight or even a compact fluorescent screw-in product and a downlight. It's not cheap. It's about $100. But this is a 13-watt LED that looks like a normal incandescent light. It's got a lens over it, so you don't see all the LEDs up in there. And when it's turned on, you wouldn't know the difference. And it's instant on, it's instant restrike. They say here 11 watts. I think we measured one at about 13 watts. But the really cool thing about these is they're dimmable. LEDs are dimmable. Where compact fluorescent, it's almost impossible to dim any screw-in product. You can dim a standard plug-in kind if you get the right kind and the right ballast, but you're going to spend more than $100 to do that. So if you want to dim LEDs, dim that light, LEDs are going to be less expensive than actually dimming compact fluorescent. But we're also seeing them in exterior fixtures. First thing they did, of course, was LED exit signs. Whenever you're trying to do color, LEDs are the most efficient way to go. We did all the traffic signal lamps and the backs of buses, the stoplights are all LEDs, seen them on cars. Now we're starting to see them in exterior fixtures. This is really amazing. I didn't think that they would have gotten this far this fast. But we're seeing that this one here, 94 watts, so we'll assume that, say that's 100 watts, 5,600 lumens. So that's almost 60 lumens per watt. that's really efficient for an LED. And what makes this even more efficient, if you had a fixture like this and said, well, gee, if I had a metal halide or a high-pressure sodium that was around 100 watts, I still got to add the ballast, so I jump up to about 130 watts. Inside the fixture, when I put that lamp inside the fixture, some of the light's got to go up and get off a reflector. So the fixture has an efficiency loss. The best ones are maybe 70%. So I'm going to lose 30% of my lumens inside the light fixture. These LED products, some of them can be glary because they haven't thought about glare control, but generally what they're doing is putting them on the bottom lens, shining straight out. There's no reflector. These things are 95% efficient. So we're at the point where we can replace low wattage metal halide and high pressure sodium. We could replace some of the higher wattage ones, but check this out. This fixture is 32 inches wide. That's a pretty big fixture up on a pole someplace to get, 283 system watts. So today, that's its biggest problem is the size of the fixture. Even the 94-watt one is, 16 inches wide. The manufacturers are feverishly working on these type of products. And to show you what it can do, this is a little calculation that I had done. Here's 100-watt metal halide. My average foot candles was 0.83. I just did a one-to-one replacement on the poles. Didn't change anything. Again, this would have been 129 watts. Here's the 94-watt LED. My average went up to 1.14. So I got more light for less power. Again, a suspendy fixture today, it's gonna come down. This is just too good of a fixture. And what does it look like in an outdoor space? This is actually a space that Seattle City Light did. I'm gonna turn it down just so these show up a little bit more. This is a street in Seattle. Lovely high pressure sodium. Here is a street two blocks away that all they did was replace the lights with LEDs. Now, one of the problems LED manufacturers are having is they're a little bit spotty. They're working on trying to get them spaced out, get the light pushed out. But even if I go back, it's like, well, those aren't perfect. There's a lot of spottiness to those light fixtures, too. If you're in Seattle, it's up by like 105th and Aurora. I don't know the exact streets that they're on, but it's in that general vicinity. If you really want to know, we could find out. Call me. And I can find out exactly what streets, but somewhere in that general vicinity.
Yeah. Do you know anything? I know that there are studies out there for lighting parking lots, for example, or streets like that, where the rule of thumb right now has way too much lighting for these spaces, and being on the lead light pollution committee, you might have a little bit of insight into this, but people have a sense of security with much less light than we're typically including on sites. I don't know if you have more information
on that. Yeah, sure. I mean, basically the question, because I'm supposed to repeat it for the people recording in the back, is do we need as much light as we're putting in parking lots? Can people see better under lower light levels? Or what levels do we really need?
Security.
And security, how bright, how does it feel in space? Well, one of the things that we've done on the ASHRAE committee is to say, well, LEED already said that there's four zones for exterior spaces, but there's only one light level recommendation in ASHRAE, and it references the ASHRAE standard. So it's been out for public review. We got two comments. They were nothing on the lighting levels. It was just how we defined the four zones. This would have been zone four, where zone one would have been, maybe the downtown core area of Portland between I-5 and 405 and... I'm not sure which end on the north and which end on the south, but it's kind of that core downtown core area would be lighting zone one, which is the levels that typically would be put in by code today. Where zone four, which is kind of what this one would be, is, I'm not in a national park, but I'm close. Because of my surrounding environment and how bright my surrounding environment is, it's really important to match that, because if I have put too much light in, I create almost a dangerous situation. When I leave that brightly lit space, I can't see into the dark. But if I lower that level to match the surroundings, I'm actually more safe, whether I'm driving a car, whether I'm looking for someone who might be moving in trees. If the light levels are similar, I can see better. So we've created these four zones, and they will be incorporated into the LEED things when 3.0 comes out, and they'll be in the 2007 ASHRAE standard. No, they won't. Yes, they will. They'll be in the 2000. I think they'll be in the 2007. Anyway, they'll be close, if not in there. It deals with a lot of it with contrast ratios of what's on your site versus what's off your site next to it. Yeah. One of the other interesting things about new technology, and this one goes back to T5, is they use a lot less material. If we want to really truly be green, and we had T12s, and we could replace them, that's an easy replacement to T8s. I got 67% of the glass, phosphor, and metals. If I could take that fixture out, put a new fixture in that only used T5HO, because I can get twice as much light from one T5HO, again, using the same, energy efficiency is exactly the same as this two-lamp system of T8s, but I'm only using 21% of the glass, phosphor, and metals. I mean, that's good for the environment. I'm using less raw materials. Plus, I'm going to recycle my lamps. I only have half the number of lamps to recycle. So it's good for business. Again, some of it is fixture dependent. T8s work very well in many applications, as do T5s. You really need to look at the application to figure out which of the two is better. Electronic ballast, we have to have an electronic ballast with our light fixtures, with our T8 systems. Typical one on a two-lamp system today is 58 watts, but there's a new generation of electronic ballasts out. But I tell business owners, I tell the utilities, I say, quit buying standard electronic ballasts. Buy these high-efficiency, high-performance, energy-saving, whatever you want to call them, electronic ballasts like the GE Ultra Series or the Advanced Optanium or the Sylvania QHE QTP or the Universal Lighting Ultimate. It doesn't sound like much. Oh, gosh, it saved 3 to 4 watts. Well, 3 to 4 watts over 1,000 fixtures is a lot of watts. And funny thing is, these ballasts don't cost any more. Or if they do, they cost like a buck more. So if you're an existing facility and you're going to buy some new ballasts and you've got T8s, don't buy standard ones. If you buy normally advanced, buy their Optanium. If you buy GEs, buy their Ultra Series. Just buy those as retrofit ballasts. And if you're specifying a new system, say, high-performance electronic ballasts. How much watts can we save by doing some of those? Well, if we just do the high-performance ballast, we can save about 5% of the energy. We could put in higher efficiency lamps and get all the way up to what the Oregon Energy Trust recommends doing is the high-performance ballast on the 3,100 lumen lamps, and it's 12.6% more efficient than what we're putting in today. That means I can put in 12.6% less fixtures or lamps or ballasts, 12% less wiring. That potential exists for not just a 12% energy savings, but a 12% dollar savings. Because this ballast doesn't cost anymore. The lamp costs a little bit more, but still, it's going to work out. Some of the HID products, they're trying to compete again, because in high base systems, they've gone to this type of a fixture, and they're going, we're losing out. So they've come out with electronic ballasts, and sure, there's some energy savings. We can get all the way up to, from 420 watts up to 375 watts, so we can save that 90 watts plus. The lumen depreciation is better. We don't lose as much light. So I can actually put in 22% less fixtures by using the electronically ballasted metal halide. Expensive, yes, but boy, 22% less fixtures, that probably would take care of the extra expense of the ballast. The lamps last a little bit, about 50% longer on the electronic ballasts. Okay, I'm trying to speed up here because it's already 2 o'clock. I only got 30 minutes. Got a lot to go. We'll do it. We'll do most of it. This is a quick scenario to look at. If I had an office space and I was going to retrofit, or this could be a school classroom or any kind of conference room, I could have a number of different light fixtures in it. And this might be the old lens style fluorescent fixture. You might find that one in there. You might find the parabolic fluorescent fixture, which I actually hate. In offices and classrooms and conference rooms, because it makes the space feel dark. And even though it's a lot of foot candles, it just makes the space feel dark. Recently, people have gone to this recessed indirect. It's a perforated basket. The light shines up into the top and then gets reflected out. And then there's another new kid on the block, which advanced lensed or high-performance lensed fluorescent fixture. That's a very interesting scenario. So here's my lens fluorescent fixture, and I can see that I've got 67 foot candles on my keyboard, 44 over on the desk. I'm at about 1 watt per square foot, which is where I'd be shooting for from a design standpoint. I would like to see somewhere between 30 and 50 foot candles average. Well, I got 49, so I'm at the high end of the range of IES recommended light levels. Little bit of glare, it's hard to see it, but a little bit of glare right there on the computer screen if I have CRTs, no glare if I have LCD monitors. By the way, LCD monitors, if you haven't switched over, much better energy efficiency, and it gives you a lot more desk real estate too. I could go to a parabolic fluorescent fixture, again, which I said I don't really like, and we can see that my light levels went up a little bit, 50 and 67. My average went down by 1 foot candle, but it's still at the high end of the range, still at 1 watt per square foot.